in ko pridem jaz nazaj, ne pa te samo stan, imam tiste dolge hodnike, ne. Tam dol so vrata, pa treba, ne. In jaz pridem tam, pa premam, pa sem vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam, zagledam ma doma eno šo.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad, mlad in tudi siv. Siv, ne ta nemški občaj, črn pa to ne. Prav tista prava volk. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiu Študent.
Spoštovane poslušalke, dragi poslušalci, lepo pozdravljeni. V tokratnem Zeitgeistu bomo govorili predvsem o tehnologiji in industriji masovnega nadzora. Oddaja bo nekako razdeljena na dva dela. V prvem delu bomo govorili z Lenartom Kučičem, poznavalcem telekomunikacijske in informacijske industrije.
Na drugem delu pa bomo obravnavali primer Velike Britanije, ki velja za eno izmed najbolj razvitih držav na področju zbiranja informacij o svojih državljanih. Zakaj je temu tako, nam bo obrazložil aktivist No2ID kampanje James Baker.
V prvem prispevku bomo torej govorili s Lenartom Kučičem. Predstavil nam bo začetke uporabe videotehnologije v namen nadzora.
Ja, dobro vprašanje je, kje se vse skupaj sploh začne, zaradi tega, ker že od tam nekje konca 70-ih let, seveda odvisno od posamezne države, je bil najbolj aktualen sredstvo nadzora pač ta klasična nadzorna videokamera. S temi kamerami se ima največ izkušnje Velika Britanija in tudi predvsem njihova ta aktivistična skupina State Watch je na to temo največ povedala in imela največ kritik, pa tudi obstaja zaenkrat največ raziskav na to temo, koliko je ta oblika nadzora sploh učinkovita in kolikor vem, večina raziskav kaže, da so bile obljube prevelike in da se niso uresničile, predvsem tiste, da bojo kamere nadzorne zmanjšale število kaznivih dejanj, olajšale pridobivanje podatkov za tožilstvo in podobno, ampak se to ni uresničilo. Recimo, to je taka prva tehnologija, ki se je razmeroma množično uporabljala. Pa so pa pač počas z razmahom interneta in elektronskih komunikacij je prišlo tako, korak po za korakom. Vemo, da je trenutno v veljavi direktiva o hrambi elektronskih podatkov, ki pač spet odvisno od države predpisuje, da se podatki v vse elektronski komunikaciji hranijo za določen čas. Takih in drugačnih tehnologij je pa seveda vse več, ravno zaradi tega, ker so tudi obljube vse večje. Recimo, ena od stvari, ki se zdaj dosti množično dogaja, je to, da se video nadzorni sistemi, ki so prej preko ne obstajali individualno, recimo je vsaka stavba, ki je to imela nameščen, imela tudi svojega operaterja, reke video rekorderjev, ki so to snemali, ampak te kamere se pa zdaj, oziroma te sisteme se pa zdaj nadgrajuje, pa menja v predvsej bolj take pametne sisteme, ki pa ne samo, da so povezani v vse večje baze, ampak imajo v ozadju tudi vse bolj zmogljiv softver, ki omogoča od analize prometa do preštevanja ljudi, ki zdržujejo, do prepoznavanja tablic, prepoznavanja obrazu in vseh teh identifikacij, ki omogočajo prepoznavanje posameznika. Tako da to so stvari, ki se nekako evolutivno širijo in ki so postale tak dosti samoumeven del vsakdanja.
Samomnevna je tudi uporaba tehnologije v našem vsakdanu. Uporabljamo je nekako na vsakem ogalu in je s tem tudi fenomen našega časa. Kako razumemo ta fenomen in kak je nek zgodovinski tok tehnologije same, nam obložoži Kučič.
So teoretiki, ki trdijo, da je za naše nerazumevanje tehnologije, da je kriva že staro grška delitev na pač filozofe in obrtnike. In da je humanistika tehnologijo kot tako obravnavala v obrtniški sferi. In zaradi tega pač ni prepisovala kakšne posebne filozofske in s tem pol tudi družbene teže. Ampak mene začne trend zanimati nekako z vzponom statistike. Ker se mi zdi, da takrat okoli podpisa Vestfalske pogodbe, ko so države naenkrat postale veliko bolj jasno definirane, oziroma kjer kraljestvo ni bilo več odvisno samo od uspešnosti posameznega vladarja, ker drugače prej je vsak, če malo karikiram, je vsak kralj ni vedel točno, kakšno kraljestvo imel. Lahko ga bo razširil na trikrat, lahko ga bo zgubil pol, medtem, ker so se pa enkrat postavile vsaj približne neke državne meje, je bilo pa jasno, da pač to, kjer vladar bo na oblasti, niti ne bo imel toliko vpliva na to, kakšne bojo meje, kakor prej. In takrat je pač postalo pomembno to, da je vladar vedel, s kolikimi podložniki, hektari in vsem ostalim razpolaga ta kraljestvo. In takrat je pol postalo to izredno pomembno iskati ene načine, ki ti omogočajo izmero in nekako tudi projekcijo tega, kakšne bo zaradi tega, ker je to bil način ali pa priročnik za vladanje. In tudi z tega pol izhaja, da je statistika takrat v tistem času počas postajala, Nemci bi rekli, štat, Wissenschaft, znanost, pomembna za vladanje. Na vse skupaj se potem tudi te zgodne razsvetljenske ideje obesijo od matematika Leibniza, ki je začel v matematiki videti tudi eno sredstvo, s katerim je mogoče razlagati družbene procese, kar pomeni tudi matematiko vzel iz sfere matematike in jo je tudi dal že počasi na modeliranje pa na razumevanje družbenih fenomenov. Pomate Francisa Bacona in njegovo novo Atlantido, ki je tudi bila ena taka prvih, vsaj menj znanih tehnoloških utopij, kjer so vladali znanost, razum in tudi do neke mere tehnika. Potem so se pa bolj na ti trendi tako malo ciklično razvijali. Recimo, vsakeč je bilo tako, da je ena nova tehnološka zadeva je sprožila velike nove obljube, ker če še evo s to tehnologijo bomo pa zdaj res lahko te tehnološke utopije izpolnili. Na kar je sledil razočaranje, ker tega sedanja tehnologija ni zmogla, ampak je seveda prišla nova tehnologija, ki je spet obudila te obljube. Zaradi tega, recimo, če si vzamete za no, tako zanimivo nalogo no, in greste prebirati zapise iz leta 1870 do 1890, ko se je električni telegraf zares postavljal, boste ugotovili, da so takrat avtori izpostavljali podobne obljube, strahove, pričakovanja in grozne scenarije, kot potem pri telefonu, pri televiziji, pri kabelski televiziji in ne nazadnje v reviji Wired, tam konc 90-ih let, ki je pač ta status na našem dobil internet. Kaj nas vse to nauči? Nauči nas samo tega, da so ideje ali pa miti izredno trdovratni in da se izredno dobro prilagajajo na trenutno stanje tehnologije in družbe, kar pomeni, ni toliko problem, da se danes nahajamo v toliko radikalno novih časih, kakor to, da imajo zelo stari miti malo drugačno podobo, kakor so imeli časih in se seveda za nas, ki živimo v tem času, kar je seveda značilno za vsak mit, zdijo zelo realni. Kakor se lahko danes smejemo velikim pričakovanjem, ki so jih imeli tudi politiki in drugi teoretiki od električnega telegrafa ali pa od kabelske televizije in se rečemo, joj, kako so lahko tako razmišljali, kako so lahko pričakovali, da bo taka primitivna tehnologija imela toliko velike družbene vplive, ampak v resnici pa delamo enako napako. Tukaj ne problematiziramo mita, ne problematiziramo tega prepričanja, da je mogoče družbo prej ali pa kasnej predvideti in napovedovati, ampak samo vedno znova mislimo, da samo čas še ni bil ta pravi. Tokrat pa bo, tokrat pa res bo.
Od tega pregleda in razmišljanja našega sogovornika bomo šli malo naprej. Govorili bomo o vsakdanjem nabiranju video in drugačnih informacij. Pri teh pač nabiranih se nabira precej balasta. Kdo to pregleduje, kako se uporablja in kako se cela zadeva procesira, nam bo obrazložil Lenart Kučič.
Večno razlikovanje med kvaliteto in kvantiteto podatkov, da s količino podatkov narašča tudi količina šuma in da v resnici to je danes tudi že jasno, da če imaš ti zgolj napredne matematične algoritme in zadost procesorske moči, še zmeram ni rečen, da ti iz vse te podatkovne reke dejansko izluščiš kaj uporabnega. Mene bolj skrbi nekaj drugega in to je ta slepa vera v te algoritme, kar pomeni problem nastane, če recimo naša policija ali pa kjer tako druga policija preveč nekritično verjame v te informacijske sisteme. Tukaj imamo, dobro, velikrat uporabljamo primerjavo s filmom Minority Report, kjer imaš tudi izpostavljen tak skor popoln sistem, ki je sposoben napovedovati kazniva dejanja še preden se zgodijo. To se morda sliši utopično, ampak v resnici ker neki ljudi, ki se ukvarjajo z elektronskim nadzorom, nekje verjamejo, da je to možno, a to nekoč bo možno. In nerodno pa je, če bo zaradi takih ljudi, ki verjamejo v filme, kot je Minority Report, in ki verjamejo, da je mogoče danes postaviti, a to da je mogoče v prihodnosti postaviti elektronske sisteme, ki bojo predvideli, kaj se bo zgodilo čez, ne vem, 3 dni, 1 teden, tak pogled v prihodnost možen, če bo ta vera dost močna in bo imela dost politične podpore, da se bojo taki sistemi postavljali, bo izredno težko komorkoli ugovarjati ali podopovedovati, da so pa te sistemi v resnici, ne, v filmih, izredno nezanesljivi. Kar pomeni, tveganje, kako to prinaša, je, da boste postali žrtev računalniškega algoritma, ki bo za vas v konkretnem primeru, ki ste se tako pa tako oblečeni, tako pa tako obuti po 3 do 5 izmenjanih kratkih sporočilih z ne vem kom, 5 prebranih mailih in še ne vem kjerih vzorcih, ki se bojo pač v realnem času mleli, boste označeni za potencialno sumljivega bohvečeza. To, taki primeri niso samo hipotetični in so se že dogajali. Dogajajo se in v kazenskih postopkih, dogajajo se in v teh protiterorističnih ukrepih, dogajajo se in v Veliki Britaniji in Ameriki, ko so pač bili žrtve algoritmov, dogajajo se ne nazadnje tudi in v zavarovalniški in v bančni industriji, kjer noben od nas v resnici ne more vedeti, kjer računalnik po kakšnih kriterijih nam je odobril ali pa zavrnil kredit, mislim, tega je skozi več, ali pa recimo kakšen katalog, kakšno ponudbo nam je poslal trgovec, tako da to zanašanje na prepametne algoritme in iskanje ene te tehnološke utopije, ki nam bo omogočala popolno obvladovanje tveganj in seveda preprečevanje negativnih scenarijev, pa tole ima lahko zelo hude stranske posledice in zaenkrat je veliko ljudi, ki v to zgodbo verjame in tudi veliko ponudnikov tehnologije, ki takim ljudem potem pač prodajajo svoje izdelke.
Tako, s tem je konec prvega dela oddaje. Polčas bo posvečen glasbeni interpretaciji nadzora s pesmijo Dead Kennedys I Spy.
I'm
prvi del je bil namenjen nekaj teoretskem aspektu in zgodovini, drugi del pa bo predvajan v celoti in obdelovali bomo situacijo v Veliki Britaniji. Pogovarjali smo se z James Bakerjem, aktivistom pri No2ID kampanji, ki se je borila proti nacionalni identifikacijski bazi. Kaj je ta baza? Zbirali so osebne podatke, torej zelo veliko različnih postavk plus, kadarkoli se je osebne izkaznice nekje, naj bi se osebne izkaznice nekje uporabljala, bi se to zapisalo v skupno podatkovno bazo. Na srečo je bila sicer ta vzpostavitev te nacionalne identifikacijske baze zavrnjena, vendar je James poudaril, da so na obzorju že nove nevarnosti, kot je komunikacijski zakon, izhajajoč iz direktive Evropske unije, ki zahteva, da se sranjujejo naše komunikacije, torej telefonski pogovori oziroma logi in SMS-i, e-maili, spletna zgodovina naša za več let. In seveda ima pa tudi Velika Britanija že več obstoječih podatkovnih baz, ki nabirajo neke podatke o svojih državljanih. Nadaljuje James Baker.
Yeah, so that database we were talking about there is one that was proposed called the National Identity Register. That database has now been scrapped, but what is happening is this tendency that there's lots of different systems in the UK that can record information. So that tendency is going on, and the new threat we're really campaigning against at the moment is the recording of everyone's communications data. And that's being proposed to be done under a draft communications bill, which currently our UK Parliament is looking at. It's going through Parliament at the moment. And that draft communications bill is proposing to record all the information of when you send someone a text message, an email, when you make a phone call, when you look onto a website, and it records the information of what website you've looked at. It records information of who you've sent your text message to, at what time you've sent your text message. Same with your emails as well. It records details of everyone you've sent an email to, when you sent that email. So from collecting all of that information together, you can build up a very detailed picture of someone's life. In fact, the detailed picture of the life built up from all this information, sometimes they actually know more about us than we know about us, because they'll be able to say, hey, 2 years ago you were looking at this website, and we would have totally forgotten ourselves, but it'll be there somewhere on a computer system. But you know, and you can be judged by that in the future. You know, a lot of people at the moment, something may be legal in the country. You may live in a society where it's okay to practice a certain religion. You don't know, in 10, 15 years' time, you may have a different government. You may be living under a different government, a different system, and that religion may be persecuted, or you may be persecuted for your beliefs. So if the government then has all that information about what your beliefs are, then there's a real risk there that it could lead to persecution. And we've seen this in other countries. Historically, we've seen this type of persecution from governments collecting information about people, and currently it still goes on. People are persecuted because of who they are and what they are, and because of the information collected about them by government. So we, as a privacy campaign, we argue that people should have a right to keep their private lives private, because we would argue that it's not the job of government to be knowing what website we looked at. It's not the job of government to be, you know, telling us needing to know what religion we practice, or what our sexuality is, or what our beliefs are. So that's what we are. We are a privacy campaign that is trying to defend people's right to have a private life, to live without other people snooping on them, spying on them, and placing them under surveillance.
And I've also read about the police national database. That's also one operation of it.
Yes. Yeah, so the police have different national. They have a few different databases which are problematic. There's the police national database, which is problematic because it can store information about protesters and campaigners. They have the national DNA database, which the UK has got the largest register people's DNA in the world. It's got many millions of people's DNA, and many of those people are innocent. They've never been convicted of a crime. Because if you're arrested in the UK, they take your fingerprints, but they also take a sample of your DNA. That's a physical sample, so that's you store samples of your cells from your body, and then they create a profile from that of your DNA, which can be used to identify you. So we have that database, and we say that's worrying because it has so many innocent people on it, and also it has a disproportionate number of black people compared to white people on it, and it also has lots of children on it as well. So we say there's lots of problems with that DNA database about people. Well, you know, the government not actually having a right. If you've never been convicted of a crime, they do not have a right to have a bit of your body, to have your DNA stored on a record somewhere. And also, I mean, there's so many of these databases now. They have one for the number plates of cars, automated number plate recognition, they call it here. And you have these scanners, these readers. And when you drive your car past one of these, they'll scan your number plate, and that information will then be stored for a number of years on a system. And they have so many of these cameras now, and of course so many car journeys. They've got one of the largest databases in the world. They have literally millions and millions of these logs, and the log will have the time and date of where your car was. One thing I tried to do as a campaigner, I said, well, I know you have these cameras. Can I see my own record? Can I see where my car journeys are, what information you have? And that was actually denied to me. Although you're meant to have a right to be able to access your own information, but that they can say if it's a case of national security, so if it would help terrorism or something like that, they don't have to give you this information, and they don't even have to tell you they're using that excuse. So I was denied the information, and I wasn't given the exact reason of why I was denied, but we think they're using an argument of national security. So I can't see my file, and I think there's something that should scare people about that, the idea that the government has a file of your movements, which you yourself are not allowed to see. I think is something deeply, deeply worrying. I mean, you only have to look at the examples of modern history. Any scholar of history will tell you how governments in Europe have misused that information in the past and could do again. I think governments and people in power and control have always wanted to spy on people that they're controlling and governing. I don't think that is something new. I think what is new is that the technology now exists to make this more practical. I mean, in the old days, they would have paper files, and you'd have big departments like the Stasi. They'd have their paper records, rows and rows of these documents on everyone and all these papers. So people were doing it in the past. It's not a new thing, but now we live in an information age. There's so much information out there to record. So it's actually, and there's so many more devices that record information. So you can actually record, because there's so many cameras, computer chips. Every time you use a computer, that creates a log of when it's been used. It's possible to store and know a lot more about people. So I think it is really the technology. The technology has developed, and governments have made use of it. And what we need to do now is actually to create laws to protect us against some of the ill effects of technology. Technology has been wonderful. You know, we've all enjoyed the benefits that the modern world has. It's hard to imagine a world without the internet, without telephones. You know, I would not be able to do this interview now if it was for not for modern technology. But we need laws to catch up with that so that they can protect people. And I think in some ways the laws and societies and governments are still quite old-fashioned and get into grips with this new technology. And just as in the past people have had to campaign for their freedoms to go and do protests, I think now it is a case that we're protesting for our freedoms in this new digital age, and it's everyone's responsibility to stand up and fight for these freedoms, so that in this digital age stage we can live in a free way without being placed under the surveillance.
And how many cases have been of abuse, like selling the data or simply intimidating people based on their the data that was collected about them, like protest organizers and stuff?
Yeah, I think I think in the UK at the moment, I don't think we have a government that is kind of intentionally trying to suppress things. I don't think the government actually wants to suppress things, but what we have is a government that is and people in power which are quite scared, and so they will think someone is a threat to national security when they aren't, and they'll be mistaken. So we had, there was a guy, an elderly gentleman in a town called Brighton, and he would go along to these anti-war protests, which there was a factory in Brighton which was making these components for bombs, and there was a kind of an ongoing protest, and some of the protests they kind of caused damage to this factory and stuff. So there was a big police presence, and a lot of police were there to protect this factory, and this chap who, he was never involved in any of that violence, but he went along to all these protests, and he would sketch the protests like an artist and be drawing it. And what he found, actually, he was doing something else, and he got stopped by the police elsewhere in the country, and his car had been flagged up on this number plate system, and they'd flagged him as a potential suspect, as a risk, someone who had to be investigated just because he'd attended these protests. So I think that's what tends to happen, is that people get wrongly
Po pogovoru s poznavalcem telekomunikacijske in informacijske industrije Lenartom Kučičem in britanskim aktivistom Jamesom Bakerjem lahko vidimo, da nekak razvoj tehnologij sabo nosi tudi malho nevarnosti. In odgovornost ohranitve naše privatne sfere ter svoboščin pa je neumorna naloga nas vseh.
Zeitgeist so pripravila Kožuh in Kraševc, tehniciral pa je Jure.